found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show on LATalkRadio.com. It's 9 o'clock Pacific time. If you're listening live, thank you so much for that. If you're listening delayed, thank you for that as well. If you happen to be listening live on LATalkRadio.com and you'd like to listen to other broadcasts, go to the MariaSanchezShow.com and click on our podcasts, and you can listen to them or you can download them. There are free apps available so that you can download it to your iPhone or your Android, and you can take us with you wherever you go. Coming up this hour, we have our safety and security correspondent, David Keith, visiting with us, and then there's an event that's happening at Cal State University Channel Islands that we're going to help promote called Arts Under the Stars. But here's the five stories that you need to know about today on Wednesday, May 1st. There is a sex superbug that has been discovered, and they're calling it a superbug. It's what that means is that it resists current antibiotic treatment. So there, if you have heard, there's MRSA, M-R-S-A, and C-R-E that are out there. So it's being added to that list. Nearly 1 in 20 hospital patients become infected with a superbug, and that's according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Both of my parents, they are suffering from the effects of cancer. My dad's been battling malignant melanoma for about 12 years now. So that's the good news. And my mother had her right breast removed. In June it'll be 6 years. So that's the good news. She passed the 5-year mark. But they both got MRSA when they were in the hospital. And that means that once you get it, you might be able to not have it. My daughter actually got it also. They say sometimes the worst offenders are the gyms, the equipment, people's perspiration. So if you don't wipe down after or before you use a piece of equipment, please do so. My daughter's had it a couple times. I had to take her to an infectious disease specialist who did a 6-month decolonization on her. So I'm really aware of all this. But this sex superbug that's in the news today is gonorrhea. It's called H-O-4-1, excuse me. It was discovered in Japan 2 years ago in a 31-year-old female sex worker. It has since been found in Hawaii, California, and Norway. So the superbugs kill about half the people they attack. They're saying that it, in the short run, it's more dangerous than AIDS, even though nearly 30 million people have died from AIDS-related causes. They say the effect of the gonorrhea bacteria is more direct. Getting the gonorrhea from this strain might put someone into septic shock and death in a matter of days. It's an emergency situation. As time goes on, it's getting more hazardous. And here's the worst part about it. Gonorrhea is transmitted through unprotected sexual contact. Untreated, the disease can cause a number of health complications in women, including infertility, and in men, the disease can be painful and lead to sterility. It can also trigger other life-threatening illnesses, including heart infections. It's also difficult to detect. It often shows no symptoms in about half of the women and in about 5% of men. Gonorrhea infection rates were at historic lows until 2 years ago, and that's what's scary, is that not only has it taken a resurgence, it's mutated into something else. So what to do? Practice safe sex. If you're beginning a new relationship, you should get tested along with your partner. And the way that gonorrhea works, not everyone knows that they have it, and with this new strain, it's even more important than ever to find it. So, according to the CDC, 20 million people a year contract a sexually transmitted disease, STD. More than 800,000 of the STD cases are gonorrhea, and most are occurring in people between the ages of 15 and 24. So talk about scary. You get something like that, and then you can get all the other complications. So please, if you don't practice safe sex, do. If you haven't been tested, do, and be aware of the sex superbug. Also in the healthcare, today, Plan B And the Food and Drug Administration approved that it could sit on drugstore shelves next to condoms, spermicides, or other women's product. And to make the purchase, you must prove that you're 15 years old or older at the cash register. So that's today. Well, I should say yesterday the FDA approved that it could sit on the drugstore shelves today. The problem is with the packaging and stuff. So this is only Plan B, one step that has been allowed to do this. And there's a federal contretemps going on this week because a federal judge kicked out the government's statement that you had to be 17 in order to purchase this product. And the federal judge has ordered those restrictions to end by next Monday. So we've got two separate things going on. But in any event, what Plan B does, if you don't know about that, is if a woman is already pregnant, the morning after pill has no effect. If you take it within 72 hours of unprotected sex, it can cut the chances of pregnancy by up to 89%. But it works best if you take it within the first 24 hours. Half of our country's pregnancies every year are unintended. What a number that is. So the FDA said its ruling applies only to Plan B one step and not to the generic versions of the pill, which will remain behind the pharmacy counters with the age 17 restriction. The relatives of the dead suspect in the Boston Marathon bombing are going to claim his body now that his wife has agreed to release it. As of yesterday, the medical examiner let she's the widow, Catherine Russell, know that they were going to allow the body to be released, and she has said that she wants it released to his side of the family. So as of last night, the state hadn't yet received her request to release her husband's body. But this is what happens. Once arrangements have been made to release the body, and once that happens, a death certificate will be filed, and then that's when we will know what the cause of death was for the elder Sarnaev brother. And along that storyline, and other good news in regards to the bombing, the Boston Marathon bomb amputees are being offered by the American Orthotic and Prosthetic Association prosthetics. So they're going to provide them free of cost to the estimated 20 to 25 victims who underwent amputations. Listen to these costs, they're staggering. Costs for a below-knee device average $8,000 to $12,000 each, and $40,000 to $60,000 for the above-knee prosthetics. So the association's offer will cover a portion of the expected costs for the amputees. Victims who lost both legs face estimated medical bills of $450,000 over the next 5 years. The association says that at least half the Boston Marathon amputees lack enough insurance to cover their prosthetic costs, as some policies provide as little as $1,000 per device or only provide for one artificial limb. Also, prosthetics need replacing every 5 to 7 years. So the American Orthotic and Prosthetic Association is going to weigh in, ascertain who needs what, create them, because they're individually created for the person and their need, and without caring about the insurance costs, which is, I think, awesome. And then, of course, there's the one fund, which that was set up to provide aid to the victims. That's brought in almost $28 million, and that is supposed to help with those other costs as well. So they're going to evaluate, and they're going to treat, and they're going to create, so kudos for that. In another story about health, and this is something that I buy and consume a lot of time, this is in Consumer Reports in their magazine next month. So this is cutting edge. By the way, Consumer Reports is nonprofit, and it's an independent product testing organization. We've got a request into them to have somebody on our program next week to talk about this, because I don't want to just give news and not have some follow-up on it. But dangerous antibiotic-resistant bacteria has been found in ground turkey on U.S. grocery shelves across a variety of brands and stores in 27 states. They said that some bacteria that end up on the ground turkey include E. coli and staph. Not only can it cause food poisoning, but also urinary, bloodstream, and other infections. So this is the first time that they have tested ground turkey, and they say that they were shocked by the results. They're saying probably what has happened is that because turkeys are given repeated low doses of antibiotics in order to help keep them healthy and promote growth, but the use of that in healthy animals is speeding the development of antibiotic resistance. So I have a question into Consumer Reports. What can you do about that? My thought is, I don't follow this yet because it's undocumented yet, is that maybe when we make these purchases that we should put it in the freezer and that maybe that would kill what it is. But, of course, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration also found widespread contamination and other harmful bacteria in 2011. So this isn't new news, but it is news on the Consumer Report issue. And there's a new eating disorder out now. I looked it up on Merriam-Webster, and it's not even listed in there yet as of this morning. And I'm a huge Merriam-Webster fan for online words because not only can you type it in and it gives you the definition, but you can click on a sound button and someone says it for you. I looked up nascent this morning because it was in an article. So this eating disorder is called orthorexia. What is it? It means that people are only eating things that they consider healthy. This is truth. So you're supposed to follow a balanced diet? Well, people are eliminating entire food groups like dairy, eggs, meats, grains, and fats. So the only thing left in their diet are fruits and vegetables. And taken to an extreme, it's now being treated as a disorder. And again, the name is orthorexia. And a Boston University nutritionist defines it as someone is obsessed with eating only healthy food that they consider to be pure. So there's a disorder out there for eating healthy foods. But what Jen says is fat helps us absorb fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. It also helps us absorb phytochemicals in fruits and vegetables. Whole grains have been shown to be heart healthy, and dairy is a great source of protein and a great source of calcium and vitamin D. So those are your top stories this morning. We've got more to get into, but without further ado, we're going to be calling our safety and security correspondent, David Keith, and he's going to chat with us about his career and his concerns and some of the highlights, and then he's going to be visiting with us regularly whenever there's those issues in the news.
Hi, Maria.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm excellent. How about yourself, David?
Good.
Good. So, David, the longest stint in his career, which is pretty darn long, was it 27 years?
I did, about 27 years with the Oxnard Police Department.
As the public information officer. Now, if you're not from Southern California, you might not know Oxnard, but if you're in Ventura County, it is the largest city in the county, about 200,000 folks population. And there's never a dull moment. There's lots of things that go on. And David, why don't you describe what a public information officer is? Because people see them all the time, but they probably don't know what that title means.
Yeah, it's probably more commonly referred to as a spokesperson. I was the spokesman for the Oxnard Police Department for, out of the 27 years there, that role was about 19, my last 19 years. The first 8 or so, I was in charge of all the crime prevention programs, basically educating the 200,000 people that live in the city of Oxnard how to be safe, how not to be burglarized, robbed, raped, assaulted, etc. They say 85% of all crime is easily preventable, and it is, and that was how I spent the first part of my career, and that kind of blossomed into the public information officer role because I used the media a lot in getting the message out to the community about how to stay safe, and utilizing TV and radio and newspapers and so on kind of led me to this the public information officer role, or also referred to as a PIO. But basically, I was the spokesman of the department, so anything that happened, it was my job to get the word out to the public via the media, mostly interviews, TV interviews, radio interviews, newspaper interviews. I did about 5,000 interviews over the course of those 19 years.
That's a lot. And in your circumstances, you're always having to think on your feet because something has just happened.
A lot of it was live. I would get called, let's say, in the middle of the night because there was a homicide or a shooting or some, or a plane crash. I mean, we had a couple planes go down here in Ventura County the other day, and I would be called out to the scene. Reporters would gather very quickly. But typically, the latter part of my career, a lot of it was live. A lot of the media stuff was kind of fly by the seat of your pants and beyond the scene of what was happening. So I'd get there and I'd be inundated with requests from reporters who would be, you know, shoving cameras and microphones in your face saying, can you tell us what happened? So my job would be to get out there, find out exactly what happened by talking to the people who were on scene, people who were with our department, detectives and so on, or the DA's office or whoever happened to be present. And then I would figure out exactly what could be said to the media that wouldn't compromise the case. That was a critical part of it. I couldn't say something that would give away necessarily what we knew at that moment that could let the bad guy get away, so to speak. So it was kind of baptism by fire. It was fun. It was never dull. I had a lot of interesting times in my time with Oxnard, and you know, I'm retired now, but I look back on it with fond memories. And I also, it's interesting, I watched the Christopher Dorner case in February you know, unfold in Los Angeles and San Bernardino and so on. Then I watched the Boston Marathon bombing situation a couple weeks ago. And I put myself in that role. What would I be saying if I was the spokesperson on this particular case? So I go back, I guess, when I see these high-profile cases and think about, okay, how would I handle that, or what are they really saying when they say it this way? I mean, there's kind of a, you know, I always just say it's more of an art than a science dealing with the press. But it was fun. It was a great career for me.
Well, and were you basically on call 24/7?
I was for the most part. You know, if I was on vacation, they knew I was out of town for, you know, for a week or whatever, then they would find somebody else. But I would say 95% of the time the stuff fell on me, which was fine. Like I said, it was never a dull moment, and I'd get called out, and I became very privy to a lot of interesting cases with all the, you know, the inside info, I guess you'd call it, and then taking that and trying to figure out exactly how you convey that to the public. Again, it was always like walking a tightrope. You wanted to give the media what they needed, what the public needed, but you didn't want to go so far as to say something that would allow this person to get away or to affect the you know, the prosecution of that individual once they were arrested. So there was kind of a tightrope you'd walk. But yeah, 24/7, my wife used to joke about you know, the phone going off in the middle of the night and just handing it over to me every time, because it was always somebody at the police station calling me saying, okay, well, we've had this happen, and we need you to come out. So it was fine. It was just part of the job.
So that means weekends and gatherings and occasions and social?
Sure.
Yep.
Wow. But in order for me to be called out on an active scene, it had to be a pretty significant case. More often than not, it was something that we could just generate a press release, basically a written document that explains what happened. And if we got it out a few hours later, that was usually sufficient. But if it was something that was getting the attention of the community or the media or any kind of live coverage, then they wanted one person out there, and that's another really critical part of the job. They like to have one person, one voice, indicating what's going on in that case. They don't want multiple people talking about it. That's one of the reasons you'll note that when you see interviews, it's usually with the same person, the same group of people each time. You just want to make sure that the story is being put out accurately and correctly and without that compromising factor that I mentioned. You want to make sure you get that information out and not screw up anything. So, I mean, I got called out maybe in 19 years, maybe a few hundred times probably in 19 years.
Which is a lot. I mean, if you think about it, because most people don't work on the weekends or on the evenings or in the middle of the night. And so, because, of course, crime happens when it happens, not when we're
right.
at
yeah.
work.
Unfortunately, I'm not Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
Exactly.
Although the two biggest cases I ever handled did happen during regular work hours. One of them was about 5 years ago. A young man shot and killed in a classroom by a fellow classmate in a junior high school here in Oxnard that made international news. That happened on a Tuesday morning at about 8:30, so I was at work. And then the other case that I handled that was huge, that went international and ramifications that went on for a long time, was an unemployment office shooting that happened in Oxnard in 1993, where a guy went in and, anyway, five people ended up dead in that case. And that happened on a Thursday morning at about 11:40 a.m. So you never know. I mean, sometimes it's middle of the night. Sometimes, you know, it's work hours.
Well, and speaking of the Lawrence King story that you referenced,
right?
What is the follow-up? Have you heard on what's happening with him, the alleged?
Well, the individual pled guilty, and he ended up getting a 20-year sentence. So he's doing that, and it was solid 20. It wasn't going to be anything less than 20. Mm. My understanding is that was part of the plea agreement with the district attorney's office. So he'll do, and that was probably a year ago, I'm going to guess. So he's got another 19 years. Now, he was only 14 mm-hmm. when this happened, when he shot and killed his 15-year-old classmate, Larry King. So he would be now about 19. So he'll get out when he's about 30. Probably about 38 or 39 years old, he'll be free. But that was an agreed upon sentence by all parties involved.
Well, and the interesting thing, I like to share that story when people talk about relationships with the media, because I had an afternoon drive radio program, and David was my safety and security correspondent then. And of course, the story not only was huge, it had all kinds of ramifications, but it was local. And you were doing interviews with CNN and Australia, and I mean, you were all over. Everybody wanted a piece of you. And David took the time to be a guest on my program to bring our listeners up to speed with what this big story was happening. And you were the point person. And I was so proud and so happy and so grateful that you did that. And I really appreciate that to this day.
Well, you're welcome. And I can remember doing the interview with you. You and I have had talked on a number of other stories over the years, and we've known each other for a long time. And I can remember being on my cell phone, standing on the school grounds where this had occurred, and doing the interview with you. And you're right. I mean, there were news trucks everywhere, from CNN and Fox and MSNBC and the international news. It was certainly the biggest story of the day worldwide, and it might have been the biggest story of the week worldwide. It was unbelievable, the response we got. I'll tell you a funny story that I heard a few weeks after that. I had a friend of mine who was in China on business, and he was in his hotel room, and I guess he had CNN International. I guess that's something you can watch when you're out of the country. And he said, "I'm sitting in my hotel room, and there your face popped up on my television." And he said, "It really kind of just startled me to see anything local and then to see your face on Chinese television." And he says, "But the beautiful thing is that you were speaking Chinese." They had dubbed me into Chinese. I said, "Oh, I'd love to get a tape of that," but I was never able to get that. But you never know. The media is obviously a powerful thing, and I've had... in fact, after the same case, the Larry King case that we're referencing, I had a guy call me a few days after it happened, and he says, "You may not remember me, but we were best friends in the fifth grade."
Aww.
I said, "Oh my!" And he told me his name. I said, "Of course I remember you." And I had lost contact with him. He had moved, like, in the sixth grade. I hadn't had any contact with him, you know, for 35 years or whatever it had been. And he says, "I saw you on the news. I had no idea whatever happened to you, and I recognized you immediately. And I called information, or, you know, Googled the Oxnard Police Department. You popped up, and here I am on the phone with you." So those kinds of things are kind of fun.
Now, can you talk about if 85% of crime is preventable? That means that there's some easy things that we can do to help make our lives safer.
Yeah. On the crime prevention side of it, you know, I used to talk, you know, hold on one second, Maria.
Sure.
I'm having a little fun. It's a little fuzzy on the connection. You can hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, good. On the crime prevention side of it, what I used to tell people is 85% was easily preventable, and the studies have shown that. The vast majority of things like burglaries, in particular, people leave the doors and windows open or unlocked. And it sounds so simplistic to tell people, you know, secure your valuables, keep your garage door down, lock your stuff up, don't leave your car unlocked. But if you do those kinds of things, you instantly become safer, and it's not a very complicated or hard thing to do. You just got to remember to do it, and you got to make a practice of it. The other thing that I've seen in my career that has made a dramatic impact is the invention, really, of the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
When I started back in the early 80s, I guess cell phones existed, but I certainly didn't have one. And the first ones, you know, they look like, you know, they look like a brick, you know. And of course, now just about everybody's got one, and they're small and they're portable, and I mean, they're terrific tools. And that is a huge, huge crime deterrent, because if you're in the mind of the criminal, you got to realize that it's no longer this guy. If I victimize him, he has to go find a phone and call 911. He can call 911 instantly, and that has had a huge, huge impact on crime in this country, maybe more so than almost anything else that's been done. I mean, you could talk about three strikes, and you could talk about, you know, all that kind of stuff, and all of those things do absolutely have a big impact. But the idea that somebody has a cell phone that can notify police or get help instantly is a huge deterrent to most criminals. So, you know, I always tell people to keep that phone handy. And then on personal security, things like that, I always tell people, studies show that most victims are chosen because they appear to be not paying attention. They're not focused on what they're doing. They're walking down the street. They're not paying attention to their surroundings. So I tell people, just look around, pay attention. That's half the battle.
So, but when you were talking about the phone, I put myself in unsafe ways. I actually dial 911 so that it's already dialed, and then all I have to do is push call.
Yeah, absolutely. Just try not to push call accidentally.
Right.
You know, those dispatchers get a lot of those kinds of calls. But no, absolutely. And I always tell people, you know, if you are in a situation, or if you see something that you think is suspicious, and you have, and the typical thought process of somebody is, should I call 911? Does this warrant a call to the police? And I always told people, err on the side of calling. We'd much rather have you call if you see something, then not call, and then find out later that, wow, that was somebody in trouble. That was an assault taking place, a robbery, a sexual assault, a burglary, whatever. Always call, err on the side of calling. Dispatchers, you know, they'll politely tell you, okay, well, thank you for your call, but, you know, you might want to call this other number, or, you know, that's not really a 911 call. It's not the end of the world if that happens to you. I always told people in Oxnard especially, if we could increase the number of 911 calls by 20%, because we get people to call in when they see stuff, you're going to see a huge drop in the crime rate. And crime did it. And Oxnard has had one of the most dramatic drops in crime from 1992, which was the peak year, not only in Oxnard, but really nationally. So we're our highest crime years in the United States in its history. And from 1992 to today, crime has dropped dramatically. And
like what?
Oh, 30%, 35%, 40%, depending on what crime category you're looking at. It's down dramatically, but I think if you ask the average person what they think about crime today, most people will tell you, oh, it's much higher now than it used to be. And I think some of that is media coverage. You know, turn on the evening news and you're bombarded with the negative stuff, you know. I mean, especially like the 11 o'clock news on a weekend. Maybe there's not a lot of other stuff to cover besides maybe sports and, you know, events that are going on. But it seems like 70 or 80% of the stories are all crime related. So that builds an idea in people's heads that it must be out of control. It's worse now than ever, but in reality, it's much better than it used to be. And I used to stress that to the audiences that I used to talk to.
And David, I'm going to call you right back because there is an echo. So I'll get right to you once more.
Start your workday off right with the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Hi. We're good. So, yeah, there was an echo that just cropped up. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Excellent. I was hearing you fine the whole time, but anytime I spoke, there was an echo, so I don't know if it was coming through on the air or not. So thank you. David Keith is our guest, safety and security correspondent for the Maria Sanchez Show. Can you tell us about, I mean, Oxnard, and folks, if you're not from the area, Oxnard is in the news a lot. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. It's known for gangs.
Yep.
And some of them are third generation now. It's the grandfathers that started, like the Colonia Chiques, right?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
That must have been somewhat harrowing, because I know the district attorney actually made dress requirements and curfews and all of that. That happened during your tenure, did it not, David?
Yeah, that was back in 2004, really from about 2004 to 2006. The Oxnard Police Department, in conjunction with the Ventura County DA's office, put together two gang injunctions. And that's something that if your listeners are in the Los Angeles area, they may be more familiar with that, because those were taking place in some of the big cities, Los Angeles and Chicago, places like that. But it had not been happening in smaller communities like Oxnard. So when we launched this 9 years ago, I guess, I can't believe it's been 9 years, mm-hmm. but we did go after one particular gang in Oxnard that was a dominant gang that was creating, I don't remember the numbers specifically, it's been 9 years, but maybe about half the homicides that had been taking place
wow.
in the city of Oxnard was at the hands of this one gang. So we put together this injunction, and you're exactly right. There were curfews put into place. There were dress codes put into place. You couldn't associate with other gang members. Now it only affected a small number of people. Only, as a matter of fact, I don't think we ever had more than a few hundred people on this list out of 200,000 people that live in the city.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very effective, and we saw violent crime in particular just plummet. At one point, I remember looking at the numbers a year or two later, and I think we had drops in crime of 70% and 80%.
Wow.
I mean, it does work. It was a little controversial because people who didn't understand what it was about thought that we were taking people's rights away and so on.
Well, in profiling, right?
Say that again. Profiling. But if you look at what we actually did, no to both of those. That was not the case. And judges over and over and over again have agreed with that. And anybody who really understands what the concept of a gang injunction is really about, I think they'll understand. Everybody I ever had a conversation with who had questions and issues and concerns, after I explained to them what this really meant, they're all like, oh, that's fine. I have no problems whatsoever
mm-hmm.
now that I understand it.
Right.
So that was a challenge.
I was going to say, so education is what you had to do, I would imagine, for damage control.
Yeah, it was. And then we had some people who were, you know, vehemently opposed to it. And I understand that there's certainly room for people to not like this. I understand why there are those concerns out there. And they were out there doing their best to, you know, beat the drum about, you know, not having these injunctions. They're not fair to people. But as I said, if I could spend a few minutes explaining to people in some detail about what really goes on in these injunctions and what they really mean, then I don't think I ever had anybody not say, okay, I'm cool with it. It's
mm-hmm.
fine. Now I get it, and it's a good idea.
You're taking away their rights. They have
yeah.
a right. So, David,
go ahead.
We're going to bring you on the program when your field of expertise comes into play as safety and security correspondent. And obviously, you know your way around the media, so it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. And I appreciate you letting our listeners know a little bit about you so that they have a perspective when you weigh in the future.
Well, I appreciate it, Maria. And I'll tell you, it's great to hear you back on the radio.
Oh, thank you. It's my love. David Keith, he is our safety and security correspondent, and as I said, whenever something comes in the news in that regard, he will be visiting with us, as all the other correspondents do on the Maria Sanchez Show. We've got a list of them. I'm compiling their names and getting that so that when we have somebody on the show, then you know what it is that we're talking about and why, or what their perspective is, or that sort of thing. So thank you for bearing with us, as we're still a work in progress in that regard, just getting their information out to you. So before we get with our next guest, which we're going to be speaking to in just a little bit, it's about an event that we like to publicize and promote as much as we can to help folks. As I've mentioned, obviously the Maria Sanchez Show it's something we call personality radio. We're about current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, and what's going on in the world and about. If we can, we focus on Ventura County because nobody else does. But obviously, Ventura County cares about the state and the country and the world. So it's not that we don't hardly do Ventura County stories, but we do stories, and when we can, we focus on them. And speaking of not doing Ventura County stories, there was a story out this morning that was so troubling to me that I just wanted to share with you. The last known rhinoceroses in Mozambique have been killed by poachers. And they were working in cahoots with the game rangers who were responsible for protecting them. So the 15 threatened animals were shot dead for their horns in a park called Transfrontier Park, which also covers South Africa and Zimbabwe. They thought they were the last of the estimated 300 that roamed the special conservation area. This is an area known for conservation. So a total of 30 rangers are due in court in the coming weeks. Why are they killing rhinoceroses? Their horns. They're prized in Asia for their reputed aphrodisiac and cancer-curing properties. But here's the worst of this news, and I'm sorry to share this with you. The trade in rhino horn has seen the numbers of rhino killed spiral in recent years. Over the border in Kruger, the South African part of the Transfrontier Park, 180 have been killed so far this year. That's 4 months out of this year. Out of a national total of 249. Last year, 668 rhino were poached in South Africa, a 50% increase over the previous years. So killing a rhino in South Africa can attract stricter punishments than killing a person. However, in Mozambique, where these 15 were killed, offenders generally escape with a fine if they're prosecuted at all. So more bad news in that regard if you're concerned with animal rights. So next on the list for us is Heather, and Heather's going to be speaking.
Hello.
Hi, Heather. It's Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Maria.
You're welcome. And Heather's a new mommy. She had a baby on April 18th.
I did.
That's fabulous. These are heady days. Enjoy every single second.
I am. Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you. So a new mommy, and she's taking the time to visit with us. Heather, tell us about Arts Under the Stars, and it's in association with California State University Channel Islands.
Well, last year we did Dance and Music Under the Stars for the first time, and it stemmed out of wanting to give the dance ensemble, which I teach, an opportunity to have a big concert performance, and it was a big success for a first time event, and the orchestra joined us, and I thought it was outside, it was so wonderful. You know, we don't have a big theater at Cal State Channel Island yet, so we just created our own outdoors and did this Hollywood Bowl style event, and it was really successful, and I thought this is and so many people came, and I thought this would be great for all the performing arts to get involved. So this year, when I set out to start creating the event, I pulled in as many faculty members from art and performing art and students as I could to have this sort of eclectic evening of art and performing art. And we've got that. We've got over 120 student performers, mm-hmm. all from Cal State Channel Islands, doing original choreographed pieces, some original songs, some classic songs. We've got some short monologues and stuff from some theater. We have everything. We have a lot of digital media that has been created by the art students. That, you know, we have a 15-foot screen that will be have these original digital compositions by the art students created to go with to complement the dance and the music. So it's very exciting, actually, and really reflects, it's a real world learning experience. When I work outside and I choreograph shows or musicals, I never just work alone solely as choreographer. I have to deal with artists and set designers and musicians. So it's also created a wonderful experience for these students to learn what it is to collaborate and work together to bring a project to fruition.
And to get their work seen.
And to get their work seen, yes.
Now tell me, Heather, when is the event?
The event is May 3rd, 2013. At 6:30 p.m. we have the Art Rockers, which is a band composed of art faculty and students that will be opening. And I do suggest you get there early because space will run out. It happened last year. It surprised us. But the actual student portion of the event starts at 7 o'clock at night, and you bring your blanket and your lawn chair and your picnic dinner. This is an alcohol-free event because it is on campus, but go as Hollywood Bowl style as you want with that, and you sit and have an evening and you watch these amazing, very talented, there's an amazing talented pool of students at Channel Islands, you know, show us what they've been working on all year.
Is there admission?
No, it is free to the public, but you do have to pay the $6 for parking.
Okay.
But put as many people as you can safely fit in your car and pay for parking, and the event is free to the public.
And Heather, do you have a flyer or something that you can share with the listeners about where they can locate more information?
Actually, if you go to www.csuci.edu, there is on events coming up in news, it says CI announces Art Under the Stars. And there is also, if you are a person who uses Facebook, there is an event page. If you type in Arts Under the Stars for CSUCI, then it will come up. And you can actually see, we have 15 different trailers for the event that were created by the orchestra, the dance students, and the digital media students that are very cool. If you want a little sample of what's to come for the evening.
So again, it's this Friday, which is in 2 days, May 3rd at 6:30, and get there early because space is limited.
Yes, we're on the lawn, but last year we had 300 people with 50 performers, and we are expecting closer to 500 or 600 people, and the field will fill up. So, and if you want to get close to the event to see it, then I really recommend you get there early.
And the weather's supposed to be spectacular, so you've got
the
everything.
The weather is supposed to be spectacular. Yay!
Yeah, going in your direction. Well, Heather, thank you for taking the time to visit with us, and I'm happy to promote this, and good luck with it, and keep us posted.
I will. Thank you very much, Maria, for taking the time to let us speak to the public.
You're welcome, Heather. Thank you. Again, it's Arts Under the Stars at Cal State University, Channel Island. Again, yes, that's here in Southern California. And it is starts at 6:30 Friday. $6 for parking. That's the only cost. So, yay, we get to some more news. So yesterday we shared with you that the first professional sports male came out as being gay. So we have the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and National Hockey League, NHL. First time ever. So it's amazing that we're still having first. His name's Jason Collins. Well, today in the news is he mentioned in his statement in the article that's coming out in the Sports Illustrated magazine, quote, "When I was younger, I dated women. I even got engaged. I thought I had to live a certain way. I thought I needed to marry a woman and raise kids with her. I kept telling myself the sky was red, but I always knew it was blue." Well, that woman has come forward now. Her name is Carolyn Moos, M-O-O-S. She says that she never once suspected he was gay, so the news is shocking to her. And she said he finally just told her over the weekend, because his story just broke yesterday, that his homosexuality was the real reason he ended things with her. We're talking about very bright and talented people here, and hopefully everyone's going to be able to move on and move forward, because that's what we want with life. At least that's what I want with life. They met when they were both students at Stanford, where she also played on the women's basketball team, which is what he did too. He's 7 feet tall, this Jason Collins. And she went on to a pro career with the WNBA. They dated for 7 years and got engaged, and Collins ended the engagement in 2009. So she said calling off the wedding was obviously a tough decision. She spoke with Good Morning America, but it was the right one because I knew I wasn't getting married for the right... No, I'm sorry. Collins said that on his interview with Good Morning America. Calling off the wedding was obviously a tough decision, but it was the right one because I knew I wasn't getting married for the right reasons. Her statement is, "I care about Jason tremendously and only want the best for him. I want Jason to be happy for a lifetime and stay true to who he really is inside and out." Wouldn't that be nice if we could all say that about former partners, spouses, lovers, relationships? I always think about that. By the way, there was a story in the news today that a woman, only the fifth in the world, she got a face transplant, and she's revealing her face today. The procedure was formed 3 months ago. Why did she need a face transplant? Because her then husband, their marriage was going under. He threw lye on her, which burned 80% of her body and went below the skin, and it just destroyed her face. This was in 07. And so I think, you know, it began in love. And look what it can spiral into. It's like, how is that possible? I know that they say love and hate is one is inside the other or the converse of the other, but still, I mean, I just had an experience recently with a man that I was seeing and decided that it wasn't going the way I thought it was going to go or should go or had promised to go or whatever, and all I said to him is, "I wish you continued joy and peace and happiness. I wish you sleep-filled nights and passionate days. I wish you all the happiness that the world has to offer." Why wouldn't I? I cared about the guy. Why? I mean, I don't get that. Okay, some good news. Released late yesterday that in the United States, single-family home prices rose more than expected in February, posting their best annual increase since May of 2006, a fresh sign that the housing recovery remains on track, and they're saying not a bubble. It's very strong, solid rebound. I would not call it a bubble, was the quote on CNBC's. Now, I met with a realtor friend of mine this week, and he said the problem is, of course, because the inventory is so low, that's driving the prices high. Obviously, that's the law of economics, supply and demand. And so buyers are coming in, and they're offering over the asking price, and they're offering all cash and, you know, 30-day escrows, 17-day escrows, 3-day escrows. So to me, that seems like that's a little bit of a frenzy, but that's all right. So the Michael Jackson trial is back on. This is day two. Yesterday, the first witness in the civil trial was called a Los Angeles paramedic. He said that when he was called to the house, which was on June 25, 2009, at first he was unaware who he was looking at in the pajamas in the bed in this house that he was called to. And he said, "The patient appeared to be chronically ill to me. He was very pale and underweight. I thought perhaps this was a hospice patient." So Katherine Jackson and the singer's two oldest children, Prince and Paris, are on the witness list later, as well as singers Diana Ross and Prince. And of course, he was pronounced dead in a Los Angeles hospital again on June 25th, 2009. New product on the market that's making news. It's from Wrigley. It's a gum. It's called Alert Energy Caffeine Gum. And one piece of the gum contains 40 milligrams of caffeine, which is about as much as a half cup of coffee. And it's making news because they are saying, what is this going to do to children? And I'm normally not a believer in the nanny state, which means all of our decisions have to be regulated and mandated and all these warnings and whatever. It's like, you know, buyer beware, do your research. But when you're talking about gum, that's something that kids, it's not like an energy drink where, you know, I think you probably should be 18 or older with the jolt and all that sort of thing, but because that can have a deleterious effect on people who are younger and have lower body weight. But gum seems like it's a kid thing, bubble gum, for example. So what Wrigley is saying, to their credit, is that they are marketing the gum as an energy product for adults age 25 and older, and it exceeds current regulatory requirements on labeling and disclosure. So I guess I'm sharing this with you to just let you know that if you're a parent, that getting a piece of gum is not necessarily as innocent as you might want to think. Now, it's not the first time that gum has been enhanced with properties, but it's the first time that gum has been enhanced with caffeine. The FDA approved the added use of caffeine in food in the 50s for cola, and that's the last time they've done that, so it's coming under review. There's something called Trident Vitality Gum that has ginseng, green tea, and vitamin C in it, and Stride Spark Gum, which is being marketed as kinetic mint and kinetic fruit, but that has vitamins B6 and B12 added. So none of those gums contain caffeine. And finally, the last story that we'll be able to cover this morning is the Pope Emeritus, Benedict, is going to move back to the Vatican tomorrow to live out his retirement in a restored convent that is close to the Vatican. So he's been living at the Papal Summer Residence south of Rome since February 28th, when he became the first pope in modern times to abdicate the language. So tomorrow on our program, we're going to have a couple more guests, and I'll share that with you so that you know what to look for. We have Lance Orozco joining us tomorrow. He is a reporter with the NPR affiliate KCLU. I used to be a colleague of him there. He is receiving an award for his excellence in broadcast journalism in Washington, D.C. in June. So he's agreed to talk with us about that, and it's about something that happened to him, and now he's being honored professionally. And they also have a woman that's visiting with us that she claims that pregnancy is a time where domestic violence increases, and she's going to share her story with us. She's actually lives in the UK, so that's why we call it the World Wide Web. This is Maria Sanchez. We thank you so much for joining us, and if you can't reach us live, make sure you download the podcast at themariasanchezshow.com. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Live every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on the net at LATalkRadio.com and MariaSanchezShow.com.